We'll find out soon enough.
That feels wrong, man. I don't think it is.
Left side for the cable.
So like this?
Yes.
Why did the mic sound different? Something sounds different.
Maybe you're just not close enough.
Maybe that's the issue. Maybe it is.
You need to get in there.
I had such a cozy, it lost the coziness.
Oh, maybe you had it wrong before.
Genuinely, maybe. That could be.
So I watched a YouTube video the other day. Do you know the React channel? It's like
React Bros. Like, what do you mean?
No, it's just React, and it's this specific video was they brought in a bunch of teenagers to play NES for the first time.
Oh no! Okay, I didn't see it. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like one of those channels.
But I wonder if it is React Bros or like the React Brothers. Like, do you remember that the first thing they like tried to copy? They tried to trademark React videos.
No.
Oh my gosh, this is like legendary YouTube lore. You got to go down the rabbit hole.
No, I'm old.
Two guys who made videos, and they literally tried to trademark React videos. Of course, it didn't work, and like everyone hated them, but...
Yeah. No, they tried.
They certainly did. Yeah. They certainly did.
Yeah, so anyway, these kids were, they were playing, they had them play Mario Bros. They had them play Bubble Bobble, Mega Man, and Ghouls and Ghosts, I think. Maybe I'm missing one too, but...
Absolute classic games.
Absolutely. And it was really nice to see them just have a lot of fun. You know, like they would pair them up. So it'd be like two kids play one game, two kids play. And it's just like, you know, it was really kind of nice to see that there's really that truth there that fun gameplay has no timestamp on it. It's really just like, you know, you can give kids an NES, sit them down on a couch together, and they can have a great time.
So what's the overall takeaway? Like, I was ready for you to say they all hated it.
No.
What's the overall takeaway that they actually, like, were having fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's huge.
Kind of shocked me.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Like, when you set this whole thing up, I thought you were here to, like, say, man, they hated it. Like, NES sucks. It doesn't hold up at all.
No. You know what? Mario Bros., those games, they totally hold up. And you know, I think like it's different playing it on your own, but when you're like sitting there with a friend,
I think you have to have maybe it's a hot take to say that. I think you have to have a friend at this point to sit down and play
NES,
Super Nintendo
at length for sure. Yeah,
yeah, like maybe, more than 30 minutes or an hour.
Yeah, maybe SNES has a bit more leg in terms of sitting by yourself. Like, I think I could play like A Link to the Past for a few hours.
I'll agree with that.
You know,
but let's say outside of the best games on the console.
Yeah.
If you're playing, like, you know what I mean? Of course, you could sit down and play Zelda or, you know, Secret of Mana or Final Fantasy 2.
Yeah.
But, like, how many of the other 700 games are you going to be able to sit down and play for more than 15 to 30 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, I think every game console, probably every created, has a majority of terrible games. And just a few select. And just a few select great ones. I mean, NES really had a huge library, so...
Yeah, it did.
You know,
it did. And
there's
funny,
just probably just as much shovelware as was on the Wii.
you bring up having first time like kind of experiences. Funny enough, the other weekend, I was together with my other three brothers. So I have one older brother, two younger brothers. And we were playing Contra, Super C.
Wow.
And my younger brothers had never played it before.
Okay.
So first, me and my older brother did a run. And like, we're pretty good at Super C at this point. We grew up playing it. And we got to like stage 5 or something, had a great run. And then we like passed it over. And, you know, they're dying at level 1 and stuff. But like, having a great time doing it. Just playing the co-op of Super C.
Yeah.
Because again, it's one of those games where it is obviously one of the best on the console.
Yeah.
Like, I think everyone will agree. But it's just fun to play and sit down and play with another person, though. Like, co-op made it, you know, we sat down and played probably an hour and a half between the four of us.
Yeah.
Because of the co-op aspect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, me and my best friend, you know, back in the 90s, we put so many hours into, like, Turtles in Time and those great games. You know,
it is.
You just play them over and over. Yeah, yeah, and it's great.
Like, and
our lives were, like, absorbed by Halo when it came out.
Of course!
You know, it was so much fun with split screen.
Of course. So, coming in today here, Greg's Weekend Rental episode 14?
Maybe, yes, 14. That's what the file says. So
all right, episode 14. Thanks for listening in, you guys. Today, big news coming in from the comic book world once again. This time, it's not a scandal, thankfully. We have a CGC. Wait until it sells and we get the end results. Then we can talk about the scandal with it. An 8.5 Action Comics number one. Up for auction right now on Heritage Auctions. A pedigreed copy, highest pedigreed copy that exists, but not the highest overall copy that exists.
True.
But it is sitting at open auction right now, and I believe it's at 4 million, 4.5 million.
Yeah.
somewhere right around there already.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
That's, I believe it's already a brand new record for Action Comics number one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not mistaken. I think the last record was it 3-something for a lesser?
Yeah. I believe 3.25 in 2021, if that sounds right to you there.
I think so. That sounds right.
I think it was also an 8.5, funny enough.
Was it? Okay.
So I think there's 2 8.5s on the Pop Report.
But it wasn't the Pedigree.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've talked about Pedigree before on here. I mean, I personally don't. Like, I don't care. 8.5 is an 8.5. This one, the Pedigree label's nicer.
Yeah. Well, so this Pedigree is also Kansas City Pedigree.
Okay. Tell me why I should care.
And it was the very earliest Pedigree comic collection ever found. This guy apparently kept number ones from the late 1930s through the 1940s. So, like, he got all the...
So, like, this was a young man at the time. Or I guess, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was found in Kansas City in the 1960s, and it was all number ones from the golden age of comics in very high grade.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is the original owner passed now?
Probably. Yeah. Okay. I think the people that acquired it, I read that they had sold off a few issues that kind of, like, when they first got it, they sold a few issues every year.
Okay.
So a few have been kind of lost to other collections that they can't really trace back to the Kansas City Pedigree, but the ones they could included this Action one.
Okay, so I'm glad. That's, you know, I say that I don't really care, but you really just gave a reason why someone, like, I think that is something worth a little bit of a premium or something worth caring about.
Well, you know, a story always sells.
Exactly. So. And I think the thing, you know, when we talk about a lot of these Pedigrees, it's like, especially with video games, I don't want to say it's manufactured, but it's like, maybe just too early.
It's just too early.
For us to care
like,
yet.
Think about the time difference between Action 1 and when they found the Pedigree.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, maybe high 20s to 30 years later, you know, we're kind of at the same.
Did they Pedigree that in, well, they, when was CGC grading? When would the Pedigree have been put into place, actually?
Well, probably definitely before CGC.
Okay, yeah,
like
it was
had Pedigree, like Mile High Collection, Curator Collection, all those they had documented already.
Okay.
Even before comic
Not
grading
officially
was a thing.
Graded, they just like,
yeah,
this is a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it would have been documented in like the Overstreet guides and all that.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's, I think, one of the biggest issues here with when we talk about like video game Pedigrees, mm-hmm. where we're just kind of plucking this collection of, I don't want to say random stuff, but, you know, something that might have been kept for 10 years, 15 years, maybe 20 years at almost max.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, there's the new Pedigree from, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, essentially that's how all Pedigrees are built, is someone thought to save these things when they were worth nothing.
It sounds like the Kansas City one was incredibly intentional.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, someone
I don't
loved...
know if a lot of the video game ones have been incredibly intentional about keeping factory sealed copies of these games for the purpose of doing something versus just, hey, I was
versus
a store at
being
one point
stock.
And we versus dead stock.
Yeah,
that's
I see
the
what
big
you mean.
Difference
yeah.
in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be true. Maybe we'll see Pedigrees in the future of someone who's curated a massive collection of, you know, sealed black box titles
and that,
or something.
That very could. Yeah, I think Tim Atwood would be one of the best actual possible Pedigrees that does exist. Where someone who didn't just have this stuff, but someone who knew the stuff could be valuable, would be valuable, and wanted to collect it, kept it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess that's when I actually do care.
Yeah.
But that's interesting to hear about the Kansas City collection.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just, it's an incredible comparison when you think about it, because we're kind of at the same stage now with video games as they were when they found the Kansas City Pedigree. So like, people were already collecting comics in the 40s and 30s.
Yes.
You know, it was already a thing.
Yeah, the mindset had already come.
Yeah.
Even if there was no value, people were holding on to them.
Yeah. And here we are like 90 years later, and you know, these comics are still incredibly coveted and valuable, and
it's insane,
you
honestly.
Know, where will we be in 90 years from for video game collectors? It's hard to say, but
will anyone care?
Yeah,
that's I guess the biggest hold on, but it's sitting right now. So the 8.5 Pedigree Kansas City, I can see why people do care. That's fair, you know. Yeah. If you're a deep comic collector, that is fair. Sitting at 4.5 million, the most expensive comic book ever sold is $5.3 million for a 1939 Superman number one. And that was in, I don't have the grade written down on that, but I think it was the highest graded copy.
Pretty high. Yeah.
of Superman number one, which followed up Action's Comics number one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Action was the first appearance, and Superman was like the Amazing Spider-Man one.
Yeah, they made his own comic book.
His first appearance in his comic.
Which I, prior to finding out about that sale, when it actually happened, I didn't realize Superman number one was also that expensive.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I knew it was expensive. We're talking about 1939, 1938 books here, but I didn't realize it was that expensive.
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult to find really high-grade Golden Age comics.
Okay.
The populations are just in general very, very low.
Golden Age being between which years there?
Like 1930 until late 1950s.
Okay.
Really the 10-cent covers when are kind of the Golden Age.
With those, so like there's Detective Comics, Action Comics, Superman 1. What else is in there?
There would be like Captain America, the early Captain America comics.
Is that early?
Yeah, 1940s. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he was a wartime comic hero.
So then Marvel took it over later? Or
well, it was still Marvel, but it was like Marvel Publishing or before.
Yeah, not the like Stan Lee, I guess that's what I associate Marvel.
Yeah, that's right. It was kind of the earlier stage of that before kind of Stan Lee came in. And
okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain America is pretty early.
You know, when the comparisons are always drawn between video games and comics, and those will be.
Yeah.
I almost fear that people are, and I'm on the side of, I love great video games, great video games as history and stuff, but people are almost pushing the narrative too quickly of like video games are just like comics. It's going to work out the exact same way. It's going to happen the exact same price swings, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Which it could, but we're talking about books here from 1940. We're talking about 85 years old almost.
Yeah.
Where like video games, the oldest stuff that is selling for massive premiums is like 1980.
Yeah. But still, you know, it's pre-internet, you know, before any sort of scholarship or intentional collecting really was kind of a thing.
It is. I just mean the acceleration of price and the acceleration of, which, I mean, maybe you think it differently that, you know, in a global economy, a global place, we can have acceleration like this take place without it being like we saw what happened in 2021 when it went so quick and collapsed. Even still, I do wonder if people are getting ahead of themselves with the translations between the two, just because comics are worth X, video games should be or could be worth X.
Right.
Without having 80 years of, like, we haven't even survived one generation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I mean, everything just moves so much faster now today, you know, with the internet. It's a global market. You have people entering and exiting super fast. You have deals being made super fast. Everything back then moved so much slower than it did today.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And so, you know, you see a lot of these highs and lows much more quickly than you would have back then.
I feel like a market cycle, a boom and bust is like 3 years now. Whereas, you know, before it might have taken you into a recession for 15 years, it's like, oh, like, you know, Bitcoin crashed, Bitcoin's back. Like, games crashed, games are coming back. Comics, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In 3 years, it seems you have such a wave of new people, old people coming and going that, not that people forget, but like, people move on a lot. Price memory doesn't seem to stick nearly as much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also look at like, you know, the rate of inflation in comic book pricing. You know, you can follow like, the 10-cent pricing for, I don't know, 30 years?
40 where comic years? Books actually cost 10 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have the 60s where it's 12 cents for, I don't know how long it was, 12 years, 15 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the 70s when it's like, you know, 1.15.
Suddenly it's just like...
you know, like 16 cents. And then, yeah, it starts climbing quicker and quicker and quicker. And you can, you know, you can really see the rate of inflation through the pricing of comic book covers.
That's really, actually hilarious.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah.
That needs to be its own economic study right there.
I know.
I mean, it probably is.
Yeah. You can put it on a graph and you can just see, you know, it go up quicker and it's exponential, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And in an accelerated, I guess, exponential kind of economy, we do see price swings move as quick as we do. Going back to Action Comics 1 here, the last time I think it was a 6.0. I don't know if there were sales in between this that I could see, but... a 6.0 sold for $3.18 million January 2022. So by that kind of comparison, like if a 6.0 was bringing in $3.18 million, I mean, January 2022 is getting very close to the peaks of everything bubble. That's right in there. COVID madness.
Yeah.
So this 8.5, I mean, It's weird when you get into the huge numbers, when we're talking like $3 million. Should this sell for twice as much? When twice as much becomes $6 million. I don't know if that's ridiculous to even think. What do you think? How much should the 8.5 multiply versus a 6.0?
I mean, the overall pop is what, 78 copies?
Yeah, graded? Something like that. It's less than 100.
Yeah.
Action Comics one actually surviving.
Yeah, and pretty scarce at the upper ends.
Two of them, the 9.0s. There's two 9.0s held in a collection literally called the Impossible Collection. And it's owned by a Lebanese billionaire. So I do not know if those will ever come to market. And if I assume they'll never come to auction, frankly. I assume they'll only ever sell privately. And it might not even be an exchange of money at that point. Mm-hmm. They might exchange a company for that.
Right.
Because it's like, we're talking about billionaires here.
Yeah.
But I don't need $5 million.
There's no need for money. Yeah.
I don't need $15 million. Like, what are we, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, for sure.
So at that point, they might sell for access and like other exclusivity, which sounds dumb, but.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, that's what it is when money doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like, you want for nothing. You can get anything you want, literally.
Yes. So you have the highest grade copies of Superman. Like, I don't want to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Like, I have them. That's it. Period.
Yeah.
There are two of them. I got them both.
Yeah.
I think he acquired them in like 2011 and 2014, something like that. Because I think one of them was Nicolas Cage's.
Okay.
From his collection.
Yeah.
Back in 2011, maybe.
Yeah, he was going hard for a long time.
Might have been even earlier than that, because Nicolas Cage was like very famous for being, or for having a world-class comic collection early on.
Yeah, and he owned like dinosaur skeletons and like castles in Europe and stuff. Like,
cool dude.
Yeah,
cool dude.
He spent money like no one's business. But
isn't he like bankrupt?
He was. Yeah, I think
that's terrible.
He came to regret that, but. But, you know,
he's sitting in a castle, like, I have no money.
I have no money, but I got a castle.
Put up the drawbridge, like, don't let them in.
Don't let them.
The
don't
tax
let the,
collectors.
Don't let the creditors in.
If I was, you know, if I had that kind of money, I like to think that's what I would do, too, is just, like, buy this stupid stuff that I can't acquire.
Close the drawbridge.
Like, that's Fill unfortunate. The That's very unfortunate.
Rally the archers.
They shall not take.
They shall not take Helm's Deep or wherever we are.
Yeah, so Nicolas Cage's, I'm pretty sure it was one of the nines, and then one of the other nines, I don't know where that one came from.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about following the history of
No, I should books. Ask I should ask my old teacher, Dwight, he'd probably know.
Well, maybe he actually has the tracking.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I can only assume that everyone pays attention. Of course.
Yeah,
why wouldn't
sure.
you, right? There's only two nines. You know where they are at all times.
Yeah.
But with no other 8.5s coming up, back to the question then, where should this land? This is it. I think there's the 8.5 pedigree, the 8.5 universal. There's a couple of restored books that are nicer, but for all intents and purposes, this is could be the last opportunity to buy a book like this for years.
Well, and literally, if you want the best pedigree copy that has a story to it, that's it. You know?
Yeah, this is the highest pedigree, right? Single highest pedigree, yeah.
Yeah, so even if you buy the 9, it's not going to have the same cool history as the 9, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think that helps it sell for sure. How many days are left on it, by the way?
I think 16, 14, something like that. We're a couple weeks out still. So it got pumped up, obviously.
Yeah.
You got to get the story, the news, you know.
Yeah.
You
gotta... Yeah, I think people are like, the people that have that kind of money are trying to scare off.
You know, of course.
Potential bidders. And
you get the story out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Already jumped to $4 million.
Yeah. You know what? If I'm going to make a guess, I'm going to guess maybe like 6.5.
Okay.
That's maybe just like a pure gut reaction.
Yeah, that would be most expensive comic book by over $1 million.
It's the most famous comic in the world.
I think, Action Comics 1 should outsell the Superman for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No doubt whatsoever. Hey?
Yeah,
no
sure.
doubt whatsoever.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's the same between Detective 27 and Batman 1. It's like... The detective is the first appearance of Batman, so...
Yeah.
Is it 27?
I believe it's 27. Yeah. That does sound correct.
Yeah, so first appearance of Batman, absolutely.
Should.
Trump's Batman 1.
Yeah, because of course.
Yeah.
I don't think Batman 1 is even... Oh, I guess it's probably $1 million, isn't it?
Oh, high it's
grade
valuable.
Copies.
I'm sure it is, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, it's not that much, but like we're talking about millions of dollars here.
Yeah.
Once we start talking about 4, 5, 6 million, I'm like, a 1 million of pittance.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll acquire one myself.
Peasant money.
Yeah, who needs that? Like, I'll actually shoot even higher on it. I'm going to say somewhere like 7.2 for where it ends.
Really? Okay.
I think it's going to be a record-breaking price by quite a bit.
Okay.
That would put it almost $2 million above the other one. Yeah. I'll go over $7 million.
Honestly, I don't doubt the potential.
I just feels like something where we're going to see a fight.
Yeah. Like, well, also, you know, I think I don't know if it really has anything to do with it. I think maybe it'd be more related to the video game market. But now that crypto has done well again.
That's what I mean. I think we're in a position where NVIDIA is hitting absolute record prices in the stock market, NASDAQ, S&P, Bitcoin.
There's
a lot of stuff hitting record prices right now.
I think a few select people are probably doing pretty well. And now they're like, okay, now there's extra money to...
Yep. To, if you want to turn that that make-believe money into something real.
Yeah, a real asset.
Bitcoin, people who support it, don't support it, whatever. You have something that is, you know, not tangible.
Yeah.
If you want to take that and move it into something tangible.
Yeah.
And I think you can do that without tax implication. Don't quote me on that. You might be able to pay with cryptocurrency and not have to declare it.
Technically you should, but...
We're not a podcast about technicalities here. Don't take financial advice, but I'm pretty sure you could just pay with cryptocurrency and move on and have a comic book. But I think we're in a perfect climate. It's weird to say because I know that a lot of things for the common man haven't changed much. Like, it's still not great.
No, it's probably worse in some ways for a lot of people just because expenses are so high.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, inflation is still, I mean, pretty darn high.
Yeah, the people who are just relying on paychecks and not investments are probably the ones hurting the most.
Yeah. And then everyone who has money is like, oh my God, look at all this money.
The economy's great.
Yeah.
Never mind that rent is $5,000 for a one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, literally, right? Literally. So yeah, I think it's in a perfect climate here for it to do some real noise.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really, really interesting to watch and see what it does.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, 2 weeks until it ends. So we'll absolutely update it once it does.
Yeah.
So on that note, with comic books, going back to video games here, obviously prices are down a lot across a lot of things. I don't know the next time we'll be talking about a record-breaking video game sale, actually. Funny enough, I guess we'll start there. What has to come to market at this point to be a record-breaking video game sale? There's a few that come to my mind, but I'm curious what... you might think there.
Yeah, well, for sure, an early Mario.
That's kind of it, isn't it?
I think would be the highest performer, for sure. I mean, we saw a pretty decent Zelda.
Yeah, it's funny. Know? Like, I agree, pretty decent. But, you know, the narrative around that Zelda, if you go into the wider sphere, is still, it sold for 700,000 two or three years ago.
Yeah.
Now it sold for 288.
Yeah.
It's awful. Crashing. Yeah. Destroyed.
Well, you know, it's like video games just have that unfortunate circumstance of... coming up right before the everything bubble. You know, they were the hot new kid on the block, and then this COVID crap happened, and then everything spiraled out of control. So, you know, it's like, I think if video games had been more established before then, we might not have seen this kind of attitude where, like, you know, stuff crashes and then it's like, oh, look at that, you know.
I agree with you fully. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you can't discount the whole WADA narrative that happened.
Yeah.
The Carl Jobs video.
Well, everything is a catalyst, you know, like WADA coming in the market was the catalyst, really.
Yes, for sure. And then, I mean, you have activity, obviously. But so, yeah, an early Mario, probably the gloss sticker Mario that exists.
Yeah.
It still has never hit the market. That's a big thing of disinformation. Where people see the Pawn Stars episode and they see the 100K Mario sale and they don't understand if they're looking at a different copy of Mario or the same. They see that they think $2 million sale that happened for one copy, the 9.8.
Right.
And everyone just like, oh, that's Mario Bros. Like, there is no different copies here.
Yeah.
So that gloss sticker Mario Bros. That sold for $100,000 has still never hit the market again.
Yeah.
As far as I understand it, it is still owned by Jim Halpern and co. and actually held at Heritage Auctions, which I guess also Bronte still holds some of the ownership as well. That was the newest thing from that. Have you kept up with the WADA deposition?
No.
So in it, I guess the sale of the $100,000 Mario Bros., right? It went to a group of people, Jim Halpern et al.
Mm-hmm.
And Bronte, Dan, also retained a bit of ownership, but I don't know how much.
Okay.
I don't know if that's known yet. So a certain percentage of, I assume that's how it was laid out, percentage of future sales still go back to him.
Yeah. Well, I could see that being, you know, a legitimate... argument for, you know, selling in the first place. It's like, well, if I'm going to get rid of this thing that's one of a kind, you know.
Oh, I agree 100%.
You know, let's, if it happens, then let's, you know, retain the slight ownership stake in it. You know, that's a reasonable thing to do.
I think
if I had something like that.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's now being framed as a fake sale because he retained a piece of ownership. That's the narrative.
That makes no sense.
Hey, I'm not here to say it does or doesn't, but that is the large thing being pushed, is it was a scam, not a sale, because he is holding a percentage of ownership. I think Mark Cuban just sold the Mavericks not long ago. That was the big headline, right? Like, Mark Cuban sells Mavericks. He retained like 23%.
Well, yeah.
And my biggest guess here then is with this, because obviously retaining ownership in these is not weird, it'd be the non-disclosure of retained ownership. I don't know if that, like, I don't know where that stipulation lies in actual law context.
Right.
But that's the only...
Well, I wonder why it would matter if it's a private sale. It's not
I think it's
not
because of the how public it was made.
Oh, I see. But, you know, it's not an SEC-controlled asset.
Well, yes.
So...
That goes into that argument of it's not illegal.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the specifics surrounding it, but,
yeah.
You know, it's not a stock. It's a tangible asset. So it's like, well, I don't know if it's legally required to.
I know. And in the actual
legal. You can't buy shares in it.
The actual legal framework, I don't know if it matters.
Yeah, I don't think so. Because, like, I can't go and buy a share in it.
Exactly.
unless I, like, know the owner, it's like, well, hey, if I pay you this much, can you give me, like, a. But then you might have to, like, create a LLC around it or something.
Yeah, there might have to be.
Because that's what Masterworks does with artwork. If you invest in artwork through the Masterworks app, each piece is like its own LLC, and it's all SEC regulated. So
yeah, makes sense.
So, I mean, you know, that's not the case here, but that's how they do it.
It can be done.
Yeah. If you want public access to investing in a tangible asset like Rally or something.
Those companies still exist. Rally, Liquid, all those.
I don't know. If those they do, I certainly haven't seen anything.
The hottest thing in the bubble, hey?
Yeah.
Fractionalized ownership.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that is essentially what this would be then. Fractionalized ownership of the Mario Bros. Game. But I don't know how that's actually going to play out. That was just the biggest thing that was being reported on.
Yeah.
Coming out of the deposition.
Yeah. Because
the water lawsuit's still ongoing.
Yeah.
We'll see what shakes out.
You know, to me, there's no difference between you and I. Like, if we see a game we like, it's like, hey, do you want to go like halfsies on it or something?
Not people hated that too, though.
Well,
you know, like,
whatever. I mean,
how, like, dare you have shared ownership, or like you're going after things you can't afford with other people's money?
Yeah, that's you know, that's
isn't that why the dentist got completely slammed? It was like,
I mean, yeah, but you know, it's no one else's business but theirs. If you and I want to buy a game together, it's like, who cares? Like, if I don't want to put up all the money, it's like, yeah, well, let's just go halfsies on it. And
no, and there's a lot of things that aren't acquirable without other people,
yeah,
like helping,
absolutely.
And I don't know, like, if you want to own something, but. Neither here nor there, yeah. I suppose.
I think it's, you know, it's really just it's a product of this kind of toxic subset that are making a bigger deal of it probably than it is. You know, it's easy to look at it, I think, and like point the finger at it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really that sale, I think, is probably no one's business but theirs.
Yeah.
Because it's not a publicly controlled asset. So.
And I think a lot of people try to look at this like it is.
Yeah.
And not really.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's not understand, but not accept. That this is just how this is, though.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be part of it, don't be.
Yeah. Like, well, if you and I bought a game for $2,000 and we both paid $1,000, no one would care. They only care because it's worth
big
a
money.
Lot of money.
Big money. Yeah. And getting, like,
it's
news
only
articles.
Yeah. It's only the amount.
Yeah.
That makes it noteworthy. Yeah.
In that, I see still videos on YouTube coming up of people who are big in the video game sphere talking about graded video games still, price action, what's happening. And everything still goes back to 2021. Everything is still related to the literal peaks of the market.
Yeah.
And the narrative is still great. Games are crashing.
Right. And it's mostly by people who don't really know anything. So, or have no stake.
It's people with no stake. I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain games that some of these people own that they still say might have or should have sold higher. I mean, some of them were saying NWC should have sold for more, even though it sold for $84,000.
Yeah.
Which is literally tying a record price of this game. For a 6.5 from 2021.
Yeah.
So what? That game should sell for more, but no other game.
Well, I think, you know, I think the people who are looking at this kind of stuff need to realize that in general, on the whole, auction prices are much less than private sales.
For a lot of it.
Like for antiques, it's no different than like fine instruments. Like I've done a lot with violins and stuff, with follow auctions and all that. And in general, prices for those kinds of things at auction are much less than private sales.
That's interesting, actually. Yeah.
Especially when you get to the upper echelons of things, like the really fine stuff. That's the kind of stuff where people don't want price history. So it's like, why would you sell it at open auction?
Yeah, well, even when we were doing that comic books, they were talking about them, all those like record sales, most of them were private sale.
Mm-hmm.
like 3.25 million and stuff. Those were private sales.
Yeah. Well, that's really how you get the most exclusive stuff is private sale, because, you know, most people don't auction off the really the cream of the crop stuff.
Pretty sure with NWC Gold, even the last sale that happened is rumored to be 350,000. Now, it's at pretty good authority that that did take place. I mm-hmm. trusted people are saying that, but private sale. Like yeah. that didn't make news headlines, nothing. Like yeah. that just happened. I don't even know if other people who talk about this market are aware it happened.
Probably not.
Because it is just such a high-end private.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As soon as you start crossing that threshold of really A++ blue chip material, you're not going to find that stuff at auction generally. I mean, NWC is considered, you know, obviously a really nice item.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird how many of those have come to auction.
But at the same time, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, they pop 90.
You know,
so it's not, you know, impossible.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
Pop 90 is a lot.
Yeah, it's got the history. But, you know, when you start getting into NWC Gold, that's where it gets really difficult.
And that's why we haven't seen one auction, even with all the prices going crazy.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who'd want to take a shot at that. It's like, it's a gamble.
It is, yeah, with a lot of money.
Yeah.
So what actually has to happen then in this whole hobby for the narrative to not be graded games are a scam, prices only go down? Like, how much time needs to pass or what needs to happen for people to just realize that, like, hey, factory sealed copies of vintage video games aren't that common to come across, and people do desire them to the tune of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. It's not money laundering. It's not like, you know, what has to happen in this market?
I mean, it's just time. You know, in the reality of things, 5 years is short term for an investment of some kind. So I think you have to be looking at decades.
Yeah, actual decades.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's really, you know, for new people to enter and prices to kind of stabilize. And it's, I mean, there's so many factors, market conditions, all that. You know, we're still relatively off the hump of the COVID years.
We are in a lot of ways. Like a lot of stuff is
really
still
1 year, 1.5 years out, maybe.
Well, if we want to call 2021 the peak, I mean, we're coming.
Yeah. But I mean, 2022 stuff was still pretty high.
Yeah, it was still pretty nuts across the board. I would agree. Yeah. Okay, I see. I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, we weren't seeing a real crash in 2022. Early 2022.
I agree.
Quite yet.
I agree.
So yeah, we're still pretty close.
To mid 2023, I'd say we started seeing actual. Well, I mean, still some stuff is still seeing bottoms, but a lot of stuff was bottoming.
Yeah,
where we can now look back on a 3 to 6 month horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff is actually doing decent.
Yeah,
and I guess that goes to what you said about decades have to pass, where we can actually see a graph where it's like, oh, hey, we spiked all the way up here. We went down to a more organic level.
Yeah.
And for the past 6 years, this game has been trending between 3,000 to 6,000.
Yeah.
Like, if you want one, man, it's been 7 years now. Do you want one or not? This is the price.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you have to look at it like you do an overall market fund at some point. It's like, you know, it's like the people who buy into it and then see, oh, it's crashing, I better sell. Those are the people who lose, you know. Over time, you look at it and you kind of account for the fluctuations, the gains and the losses.
That's kind of where
you see the stabilization.
A lot of these markets aren't going to move linear. No. That's a thing. And I think a lot of people who enter into alternative assets don't realize it's going to move so non-linearly.
Yeah.
Like in 1 year, you might lose 40%, and then the next year everything could double.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know how it's going to play out. It isn't going to be just like 2,400, 2,600, 2,700. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously you don't expect prices just collapse the way they did. And I think a lot of people who did get in, I guess it's separating the investment and speculation from actual people who want to be here. And I feel like a lot of the narrative around this market or talk about this market doesn't do any kind of job to separate that of people who actually want this stuff, or even acknowledging that there are people who actually want this stuff to collect, buy, like whatever, right? The same way someone buys a complete in box video game. You don't need a box and manual in order to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's purely collecting.
Yeah.
Like you want that stuff just because it's cool.
Yeah.
You don't need a box.
Yeah.
and the same goes with sealed at that point. You're buying something to have a trophy. And a lot of people who do participate in this market are buying this stuff because you want that physical representation on your shelf, on your whatever, to have and represent the game.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's crazy for something to remain sealed when it was such an expensive item to begin with.
That's why it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
And that's, in my opinion, that's what makes it so damn fun to do.
Yeah.
It's because you're going after things in such a difficult manner.
Yeah.
Where they shouldn't exist.
Yeah. And I think really the only thing that slows the growth of the hobby is just the amount of knowledge you need to really feel confident buying something. I think like just it's not like comics. It's just like it's a book. Never came sealed.
Yeah, it is what it is, right? I agree. Yeah. I agree.
It's just it's complicated.
And so, I would say that's why we have grading companies, but you know, everyone hates one of them. Arguably the most popular grading company is the most hated thing in all the video games.
Yeah.
So I mean, kind of funny in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Who cares?
Just gotta wait for more time to pass, hey?
Yeah.
It is funny because it's almost like I purposely throw myself into the trenches of the like dissenters. And it's like, oh my gosh. Like if I just stayed away from Reddit or away from other YouTube things, it's like when you're like, if something's happening online where it's just like, oh, turn off online. Just like, forget about it. Ignore it. It's that easy.
Yeah.
I can just like, you know, if I go out of Reddit and stuff, no one cares.
Yeah.
No one knows. No one, it doesn't.
People like to just complain about anything and everything. So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I like a lot of the Facebook groups is because those are the people who want to be there, who like what they're collecting and maybe don't have such a toxic view of it. Occasionally you get people that are like that.
I think people join it the same way I join Reddit, where they're like, I want to see these people who do like it. And like, yeah, you know, yeah.
Well, everyone likes to be like, you know, if you're angry at something, game grading, let's say, everyone loves to be a part of the mob with pitchforks, you know?
Yes.
So it's like Reddit is the place to go for that.
Really is.
YouTube comments, probably.
Oh yeah.
At the end of the day.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it's always fun.
Yeah.
It's always fun. It's crazy. I just, we talk about comics in such a nonchalant way of like $5 million sales. And even in the wider sphere, it never comes back to money laundering or these big scam. Like, I don't, maybe it is just because the hobby itself is so much bigger or people just understand or something, but it's just so weird to me when you get the total. It's like trading cards too. Trading card grading and stuff. Like, yeah, PSA is a scam. It's like a meme at that point, right? Everyone knows that. You can get different grades from PSA and stuff, but there's no like money laundering or they're taking your games or your cards or whatever. They're swapping them. It's like, I don't know. It's very odd to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the proliferation of social media has really probably, I've never looked into the research of this, but I'm sure there has been an incredible uptick in conspiracy theory prevalence.
There has to be.
Thanks to anonymous commenting. You know, I have no doubt that there are people out there who form their entire worldview off of reading comments on social media. You know, it sounds really sad when I say it that way, but I'm sure it's true.
No, I don't think
like,
you're wrong.
It's one of those things where like, I don't know it for a fact, but it's probably true.
Yeah. You read it in a comment somewhere.
I read it in a comment. Yeah. And I made my worldview based on a comment.
Yeah. You saw a rumor somewhere that was true. And it's like, oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. A lot of the comments sound true enough.
Yeah.
Where people, I don't know, people who don't care just read a comment and it's like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
If someone else thinks that or says that, like,
yeah.
And then you mimic that or parrot it to someone else and it's, you know,
yeah.
All of a sudden.
Yeah. It's really the anonymity that feeds the toxicity. You know, as soon as you start like talking with someone who, you know, their real name or something, it's a bit different.
Oh yeah. You can't be an idiot all of a sudden.
People are a lot less brave when it's like that.
All of a sudden you can track their words back to them and it's like, oh wow, you're actually saying that, hey?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
So in 5 years from now, will we still be hearing about WADA Games being a scam?
I mean, you still hear about CGC being a scam, so it's been around for 20 years. That you know, that will never end, I don't think.
Okay.
It's the people who trumpet that kind of view are usually the ones who are not collectors at all. They like to crap on things. I'd be surprised if there was a serious collector out there who made that their whole shtick.
There's
crapping
on
grading companies.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I feel.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some people, you know, who are like very serious who just like, I don't ever need my stuff graded. I don't want to grade it. Like that will
exist.
Yeah,
and that's fine. You don't need to.
Yeah, that's the funniest thing too.
You literally
don't have to. Don't use it then.
But you know, if you go to sell something, don't be surprised if you get a little bit less.
Yeah, don't be salty when it's not verified, not confirmed, and no one wants it.
Yeah, literally. Because it's like, you know, we have to trust your word on what the condition is. And hopefully the photos are good enough. It's like, you know, that's why grading companies exist in the first place, is to remove that barrier.
Yes.
That bias.
Just makes life easier for everyone involved.
Yeah, exactly.
But I understand that I'm biased towards grading, so it's like, yeah, I enjoy it. It is what it is. It's just, yeah, I do wonder how the whole hobby is going to evolve in that sense.
Yeah.
In the next 5-10 years.
Yeah. I think really the population that tends to grow is the more serious collectors. The people who are trying to build something, you know, curate their shelf,
mm-hmm.
get stuff they love. You know, I don't think the casuals really have much influence in that regard.
It'll just kind of, yeah, I guess the
filthy casuals.
I guess, yeah. At the end of the day, the money will dictate where the hobby kind
of
goes.
Yeah,
hey?
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's really about the money someone pays for something.
Yeah. And yeah. If people are going to pay more for graded copies, we will see.
Which is common sense.
I agree. It's common sense, as long as you understand what the hell grading even means.
Yeah.
That, like, not every graded copy is equal. Because I think video games are still, like, way behind the eight ball on that.
Yeah.
It's like...
And that's, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I watched a YouTube video the other day where someone, like, the thumbnail and the title was, like, they got, like, their Holy Grail or something impossible. And they bought, like, a no-seal Mortal Kombat Game Boy game or something. It's like, and it's a PAL copy. I'm like, oh, man. Yes. It's like, you need to...
Yeah,
research this a little bit.
What I mean.
Yeah.
You know, I saw on Reddit someone like was super happy and it's great for them, right? But they bought like a 7.5 A plus F-Zero player's choice. And it's like, there's no price you could have paid for that. That is worth it.
Yeah. Like, sorry to burst your bubble.
Yeah, you know, even at $100, $150, you could just buy a 9.8 A++. And yeah. I think that's the big lack of understanding. The other thing they bought was an 8.0 or 8.5 Star Fox CIB for $250.
Yeah.
And they were like, I got a great deal. The seller gave me half off. And I'm just like, oh, no, man.
Half off is still overpriced. Yeah.
Why do you think you got 50% off, my guy?
Oh, no.
Yeah, but it just, and I think honestly, Price Charts hurts this because they have on their algorithm thing, it says graded and it just has one price.
Yeah.
And that is just...
And what does that mean?
Nothing. It means nothing.
Yeah.
It's far worse than CIB. It's far worse than even sealed. At least one price there, you get a little bit more of an average, but with graded, it means nothing.
Yeah, and that's why I say, like, you know, games are difficult. It's not like comics.
What? If someone had a graded price for a comic, too, you'd be like, what's a grade?
Yeah, but
I mean,
you'd
ask the most obvious question in the
world. You don't have to worry about, like, Player's Choice comic or, you know, something like that.
What about that Jeweler's Variant thing?
They got maybe,
some,
but that's
some
like,
goofy
there's usually only one variant of a comic. Or maybe, like, a newsstand versus a subscription edition.
Sounds complicated to me.
Yeah, but it's not, like, 14 Mario prints or whatever the...
yeah, 14 Marios, 10 Zeldas.
You know, come on.
Even with Modern Warfare 2 on 360, there's, like, 9 prints. I think there's like 3 that look like Black Label or something. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's not complicated if people care.
Yeah.
I just don't know if people want to care.
Yeah.
Or if we're just way too early for people caring about stuff like that.
It's just a barrier of entry, really. In some ways.
It is. I agree with that. 100%.
Yeah.
But it's super interesting.
Yeah. At face value, you just need to know so much more. Especially when it comes to different... generations. I know we talked about this already, but
but
like different generation of the games, disc based versus cartridge based, cardboard versus plastic, it's like, oh my god. You know, it never ends.
But, just need
you know
time.
That's what makes it fun.
I think that's what makes it fun. I saw another comment saying about VHS or something that like with grading VHS, the amount of variants and stuff have made the hobby worse, and I was baffled by that. I think information and learning is what drives my enjoyment of these hobbies.
Yeah. Knowledge is power.
Not like, to have like, oh no, there's 4 variants of Back to the Future. Well, this hobby sucks now. What?
It's like,
I just don't even understand.
No.
I was lost.
No. That's
lost for words.
Yeah. To me, like the more you know about something, the better you can do. If you were the earliest guy who differentiated the prints, knew this was the first release, you're the smart one.
Exactly.
Not the dumb one.
And I when I read the comment, it almost made me think, like, are you angry or salty that you were buying late print stuff now that is being identified as not valuable? And you're like, oh, well, this sucks.
Yeah,
like,
well,
who
you
cares
know,
if that copy has this on it? Like,
yeah, that was my sentiment to a lot of people complaining about graded games and stuff was, you know, a lot, I think, are just salty that they bought the wrong stuff for so many years and didn't have a, you know, $200,000 Mario 3 copy sitting in their closet or something.
Who cares about Left Bros? That's so stupid.
Like, okay, money talks.
Yeah, like, sorry you feel that way, man. I've been chasing after that for 10 years. Like,
money talks.
Guess what? It was always expensive.
Yeah.
In 2016, I couldn't afford a copy.
Yeah.
Getting a CIB was difficult, but no one really knew.
Yeah.
I'm now rewarded by owning one. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But going to a different direction here, you made an incredible purchase over the last few days here.
Yeah.
Not video game related, but art. But art related to a video game.
Yes, video game art related.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What did you pick yourself up?
So I got the incredibly fortunate opportunity to buy the original artwork for the logo to Mortal Kombat, the 1992 arcade original logo.
Would like the dragon in the circle.
The dragon in the circle. The thing you show to anyone and they know it's Mortal Kombat.
You bought the original artwork.
The original artwork.
For that logo.
For that logo. So it's an ink painting on vellum, which is like a more slightly transparent material. And that was used. They put it into a graphic arts camera, which was a huge device at the time. And that allowed them to take a really high resolution photograph of it and transfer it onto a bigger film for printing. So I have the original ink drawing, which is the only art for that logo, and two proof prints, which they made afterwards.
Who did you get it from?
I got it from a collector who bought it from the artist back in 2020.
Okay, so it was still in possession of the original artist up until...
Yeah.
2020?
He'd kept it for 30 years.
What's his name?
Paul Niemeyer.
Okay.
Yeah, he's known. He worked for Bally Williams, like, back in the day in Chicago.
Like, arcade?
Yeah.
Pinballs,
yeah,
I think is
pinball
Bally.
Arcade, yeah, okay. All that kind of stuff. Yeah, so Ed Boon and John Tobias had brought him on as a freelancer to do the artwork for the arcade cabinet. So John Tobias provided him with sketches and various things to work off of. And so he did the final illustrations for the MK cabinet.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how big is it?
It's not too big. It's only, maybe it's like 6 inches.
Oh, small.
Yeah, fairly small.
It's really small, actually.
But they blew it up to like a bigger size for reproduction. But yeah, it's because he was illustrating it off a sketch John Tobias did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... Sorry, what do you mean? I guess he was doing it off of a sketch.
Yeah, so John Tobias designed the dragon logo.
Okay.
Which he provided to Paul to do the final art off of.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha. So do you know if that sketch also exists?
I don't believe so.
Like, I would assume not. It would just be something.
It's just literally a little pencil drawing
on
a piece of paper.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
And can you say how much you paid for this?
No, but... But
that's when you know it's special. Is like, you know.
I thought it was very reasonable, and it was within my realm of affordability.
Multiple hundreds of dollars. Is that
no?
Multiple thousands of dollars.
Is that
getting more?
He made it reasonable for me, and I was very grateful for that.
All right.
Yeah. So the guy I got it from is a prop collector, and he has a bunch of movie props, like from the Mortal Kombat movie. From the games, even from the
like
original
what,
games.
What kind of props?
Like Scorpion's stunt mask, and he has like original ninja tabards from the second movie, and
that's insane.
He has the original Scorpion face mask from the first game because they were all live actors that were photographed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got the original Scorpion.
Was he selling any of that stuff, or is he also a big collector himself?
He's a big collector of himself, but he found himself in some. Divorce issue, so needed to sell stuff, which really sucks. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, that's all. How much does he want for the Scorpion, Matt? Like, so that, how bad is his divorce thing?
Yeah.
Can I make a purchase?
That one was, I think, he was asking 4,000 US for that.
I mean, maybe I'm just demented, but that doesn't sound expensive.
No, I thought
it sounds reasonable.
I almost bought that.
Okay.
That's what I was asking.
You come over to the podcast wearing the Scorpion.
It's literally just a face sash.
Oh, really?
That's the only original. He made like, he had a special mannequin made for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks, you know, like presentable. But yeah, it's just the just the face mask.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you don't get an actual like coif or hood or...
You do. It comes with a mannequin. I don't know if you can actually remove it off it or not.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. But I asked him about that. And then I was like, hey, what about the ink art, like the logo art? So we talked about that instead because he knew I was an art collector.
Okay.
Yeah. And to me, Mortal Kombat was a huge, huge thing in my life for sure. My mom, I think it was early 1993, probably around my birthday. She's like, okay, you can get a new game. And I wanted like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. She's like, you can only choose one. So Mortal Kombat was the choice.
Really? Hey.
And that really dominated me and my friends' lives for many, many years. Up until MK4, probably.
Okay. So you played Mortal Kombat for a lot of years.
Yeah. Yeah. Had them all on SNES and yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Do you still play Mortal Kombat?
No, I'm not huge into fighting games. It's like Smash or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You dropped out as a like competitive fighting scene.
Yeah. You know what? I never liked the having to remember all the combos and crap of all the characters. It's not my kind of game.
So are you telling me you sucked at Mortal Kombat? Is that?
I'm sure I was good at the earlier ones because they required a lot less.
I guess in general.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah,
it's Mortal Kombat is obviously incredible franchise, mm-hmm. but not one I have a lot of actual connection to.
Yeah,
like that artwork for me resonates as a piece of history.
Yeah,
but not necessarily a nostalgic. The first Mortal Kombat I think I had was not Deception, but on PS2.
Armageddon?
No, there's one more in there. Not
Deadly Alliance.
Yes, Deadly Alliance.
Yeah.
So that was like my first one. So okay. I didn't touch the franchise for the first, when did it come out? 94, 93?
92, art in an arcade.
It was probably the first 10 years I didn't touch it.
93 and, or late 92 for Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So first 10 years, completely missed Mortal Kombat, which I was young. I don't even.
Yeah, like, you're pretty young, yeah.
Not weird I missed it. We had Killer Instinct. I mean, that was great. That was like the only fighting game I owned at the time.
Yeah.
And that just held me through.
Yeah, like, Killer Instinct was great.
It was great. It's a fantastic game.
Yeah.
But so Mortal Kombat, I mean, that artwork obviously resonates with anyone who sees it.
Yeah.
Which makes it such an incredible piece.
Yeah, I think it's a really important piece. And, you know, it's kind of like you can't really own box art for Mortal Kombat because there's no paintings at all.
That was all done by Midway, or who would have done the actual box arts then?
Yeah, so they basically, after the arcade stuff, they digitized it.
Oh, really? It's early?
Yeah, it's pretty, you can tell on the SNES box actually that it's digital, like the it's definitely not airbrushed. There's like generated effects on it and stuff.
Gotcha.
But that logo, or that original arcade logo, was the basis for everything.
Was there arcade artwork then that exists, or not even that?
Not
like arcade cabinet.
Not really. It was mostly photo stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have, I don't want to say like the penultimate. I don't want to talk it up too much here. Well, get you too excited. But
you know, I mean, like if I could pinpoint a singular piece of art that would define the franchise of Mortal Kombat, it's the logo for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's why, I mean, Scorpion's mask was also up there. That's why as soon as you said it, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
like,
it's really cool.
You know, Sub-Zero's like outfit is like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the most.
The thing about Mortal Kombat 2 is they're all color swaps of Scorpion.
Oh, really?
So Scorpion's costume is the only one for the ninjas.
So that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then they just.
And just digitally color swapped it. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Well, you should have bought it.
So it's like, technically Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Reptile.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, that's crazy.
Smoke and MK2. They use the same costume in MK2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Except for the thumbnail of Scorpion and the ninjas. They used like a pinball style, or not pinball, airsoft style mask.
That's weird.
For that.
Yeah. Weird they just swapped like that one thing.
I think it looked better in the photos, but in terms of practicality for the actors, probably not so great because he had to do like, you know, flips and stuff.
Wearing like an air mask, airsoft mask. Yeah,
so he used the same face sash for MK2 as well.
Like, stuff like this is just insane.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this is somewhat documented, mm-hmm. even if like I know nothing about this, right? Like,
yeah.
This is a whole world that I don't operate in.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that like the information exists.
Yeah.
And I know movie prop collecting, video game prop collecting is like it runs circles around video game collecting itself. Like the value on some movie props is just nuts to me, frankly.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you know, movies have been around so long. So, you know, they have this incredible history of exchange and, you know, increase in price over the years.
Is it generational? Like, do people still go after, like, I don't even know what, I can't, 30s, 40s movies? Like, does that stuff still command massive value? Or like, will Harry Potter's wand kind of fade away as we age. Gandalf's sword.
It's tough to say. I think there will be people for a long time who will value these things. Just in general, just as a movie prop. You know, it's like if you can point to like a super important movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If we just go to a big movie.
Yeah.
The prop itself should last for a generation or two of collecting.
We'll have to ask Garth because he has some screen use costumes from 1930s gangster movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's crazy.
He's got an original gremlin as well. One of the maquettes. Really cool.
Like, that's insane.
Super cool. Yeah.
Going back to like 30s stuff, though, it's like, it doesn't obviously resonate with me whatsoever.
No.
Like, I have no connection and nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The barrier to entry seems very hard, even just from an information perspective.
Yeah.
Never mind money. I'm sure that stuff's very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But just
even those old posters?
Where I've sometimes seen some of the posters
one copy
he has.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah, it's insane.
I just don't even know how to get, like, the information to, like, care about this.
Yeah.
It's all pre-internet.
Yeah. There is a community, for sure. It's... A lot of it is older guys. A lot of it is very wealthy actors.
Okay. Leonardo, that makes sense.
Leonardo DiCaprio has a very big poster collection.
That makes sense.
And he has a guy who helps him with it. He has like his agent.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's a very kind of exclusive club.
It makes sense that other actors would resonate with older movie stuff. That makes perfect sense to me.
There's real money there.
Yeah. So fair enough.
You know?
Fair enough.
Yeah. And there's 100 years of history. So.
That's why it's lucky that you're able to grab this original Mortal Kombat piece. And is this something you're keeping?
Yeah.
You think? Yeah.
I think so. You know, obviously I have stuff I value a lot, but it's when you get to something that's just so iconic, it's like, it's even unfathomable for me to like put a number on it. It's like,
It feels super weird.
How do you like value the most iconic imagery of such a powerful franchise? It's like, I don't know. I have no idea. If someone wants to take a go at valuing it, be my guest.
You need to do the whole Pawn Stars thing now where you like bring yourself in as an expert and you're that's worth an infinite amount of money right there.
Yeah,
like,
that's right. Yeah, that's
even though you just paid X. Like,
that's
it's
infinity.
Worth,
that's right.
I just paid this, but now that I own it, it's worth like 1 million.
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing about one-of-a-kind stuff. It's worth different to everyone.
I know, like you could literally just flip it tomorrow because someone else sees it.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's
not
weird
that I would,
heck.
But it's like, you know, it has, I think it has that potential for sure.
Yeah.
It's,
and it could be flipped again after someone else buys it from you.
Yeah.
Depending
absolutely.
On how, like, again, attention and like, it's just weird. It's super weird world.
And really, it was just a kind of random opportunity. You know, I saw the sales post. And I was just like, I remember the post he made when he got that art. And I was like, oh, damn. Like, I was kind of bummed that I missed that kind of thing, even though I didn't even know.
Like, you missed it back in 2020.
Yeah, even though I didn't know who the artist was. But I was like, that's when I was really starting to get knee-deep into artwork and really loving it. And then I saw that, and I was like, oh, I feel like I missed the, you know, the
thing. Your once-in-a-lifetime chance.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of had written it off for a long time. Because usually when something goes into collector's hands, you're gonna see like an exponential increase to try and get it.
Of course, they don't want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about with the, not that you're a billionaire, but with those two impossible comic books.
Yeah.
Like the 9.0s are like, that's it. They're locked away.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, someone could give you a certain amount of money. I'm sure you'd part with it. If someone offered you $1 million, it'd be hard to say no.
I mean, it's, yeah. But, again, money talks. It's like, well, you know, you can't, obviously everything does have a value, but I think... You really learn what your threshold is when someone actually makes the offer. But
well, exactly though. That's you know, someone offers you 10,000. It's like, well, you know,
why?
Yeah, why exactly?
What
well
could I
it.
Buy with that? You know, an okay N64 game,
a week of groceries,
a week of groceries in Canada.
Yeah, like, it's just not going far enough anymore.
No.
But it's super interesting though in that world because I don't even operate in it. I don't have a lot of stuff that's like nothing. I would say is one of one in my collection.
Yeah.
It's all mass produced.
Well, I did give you a piece of art.
Oh, yeah. I got one piece. That's right. Okay. I got one piece. That's one of one. That's true.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true. Where are people, no one's knocked down my door yet to buy that. Like, where are the collectors coming from? When do I get my payday?
Rafael Kainan is an amazing artist.
It's a cool piece.
Turok is great.
It is.
Yeah. Sometimes I see like Stefan Reese when he didn't bring Turok to PAX when I was there. But sometimes I see photos of it and I still are like, oh, it's first piece I found.
Great franchise, great piece.
Yeah.
But on that note, if you're watching the video, hit the like button, leave comments on the YouTube videos as well. It all helps out. rate the podcast. Thanks for listening. See you guys in the next one.
Bye.